Fred Litchwak, our current regional councillor and running for regional council again. Welcome to the studio, Fred.
Kia ora, Aaron, and kia ora, Whangaroa and Raglan.
So this, I've interviewed you quite a few times. Is it the first time you've been in the studio?
Second time.
So, second time with me?
No, one with John.
One with John, okay. Yeah. You're getting the hang of being in the studio.
Well, yeah, I still find it kind of daunting, actually. I don't know why, but...
Okay, a few more times, you'll be right. It'll all be good. Okay, so I'd sort of figured we'd deal with the controversial stuff first and then get on with business after that. So there's been a couple of things, I guess, what's kind of extended over the term. There's the stuff with Russ Remington. He's dropped his legal action. He's still running again. You're running again. So I guess putting all aside all the who said, what said, all that, can you guys work together next term is a question people, I think, will want to know.
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, and I guess why I feel this place a little daunting is because it was what I said through this radio station that ended up potentially evidence in a high court decision.
That was the first time that's ever happened to anything we've done. So
it was actually it's one of the first time this has ever happened in New Zealand where a councillor has been challenged on his transparency views, you know, and it was going to become a benchmark on what was considered predetermination.
And which is a thing that most people didn't even know existed, like the idea that you're not supposed to make up your mind before you go into the council meeting where you vote.
Well, it's not just making up your mind. It's things like on this interview. You might say something like, what do you think about the new train that's going to be from the wharf to Hamilton?
Which is not happening, folks.
No, but this is, you know.
Hypothetical.
And I say, absolutely, that's a great idea. I'd vote for that.
Yeah.
Well, I've just predetermined my position. Therefore, I would not be allowed to vote on that particular issue because I've already showed my cards. I have to have an open mind right through to the day that we vote. So you'll never catch me saying I'm going to vote for that.
Yeah.
Or having a strong opinion about any particular issue. So you've got to make it quite clear that for this I will give you my view, but that does not necessarily represent the regional council's view.
Yes.
Or whether or not at the end of the day when it comes to the vote, I will maintain that view I've just expressed now. So I wasn't aware. Get into it.
Like I'm interviewing people all the time in local body politics. I wasn't aware that was a thing. And I think most people, the constituents, would view that as unhelpful or we want to know.
It's totally unhelpful.
We actually want to know where the councillors stand.
Totally.
On issues.
And I get in trouble for doing that, for being transparent. We're one of this is the power struggle, the political games that some councillors play. And it's the slippery pole of politics, you know. They want to be a leader. They want to be a Donald Trump. They want to lead. They want to rule. But like all the signs that you see, you know, up and down or all over the country, the more signs that are placed, the more there seems to be the more desire to be a ruler, to have that power game. Not everybody's like that. But generally it seems to be that it's this power game. And that's not me. I'm there to vote for what's right, you know, mostly about environmental issues. That's why I stood for regional council, because regional councils manage our natural resources.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I sort of weighed off the topic a bit. Carry on.
Yeah, well, I want to come back to you're saying you can't work with Russ. One or both of you might not get re-elected, of course, and it would cease to be an issue. But he's received six standing for his ward.
Yeah, so the chances are he may get back in. But he's standing on a platform that is quite really misleading. The platform he's standing on is he's opposed to three waters. Well, a regulatory authority, a regional council, has no mandate, no jurisdiction over three waters.
Well, no, that's the district council that does
completely.
That work.
So why would you have regional councillors standing on a platform pretending they have an influence over that topic when they have none.
I guess if we've been truly accurate, the regional council does process the resource consent application for things like storage works and stuff like that.
Exactly. So, and all it is the name at the top of the consent.
But
it's
no
influence on who does
You're
the
You're not
job.
Spending the money, which is where power is.
We don't dictate the contractor.
Yeah.
We don't say who the contractor is, whether that be WDC in providing a sewage service or whether it's Watercare.
Well, I guess he's fairly...
We're a regulatory authority, full stop.
So let's say you're both back in. Is that an issue? Like, do you have to work together?
You have to have the majority support of council. So there's 14 councillors, and I have to have 8 people on my side for a vote to go through to support what I stand for.
Are you saying he's going to oppose everything you stand for?
Well, he kind of has, regardless.
Ask you the question: are you going to oppose everything he stands for?
No.
Okay.
If things line up, then I'm not doing it for an ego trip.
Yeah.
I'm not there to be a power ruler.
Okay.
Or to pity or take spite. I'm there for the right reason, and that is if we're voting for the right thing that I consider right for our constituents, then I'll support it most definitely, and I do that regularly.
All right. Now, the other thing that preceded this was, like, you were barred from being for certain access to certain parts of the council or being on council. I can't remember the details, but that was not based on Russ Remington necessarily, but based on complaints.
Well, it kind of was, actually.
But there were other people within council who made complaints. Do you want to reply to that or say
sure I can
or say is there stuff that you've learned along the way that you might do differently, that, you know, all that kind of thing?
Well, first off, not one of the complaints were founded on evidence. They were complaints, and a lot of complaints were made for vindictive reasons, in my opinion. Again, the slippery pole of politics.
Yeah.
Like, Aaron, I can write a letter and complain about you for no reason.
Yeah.
But it's logged as a complaint. And if you dig down and you looked at the complaints and the reasons that were laid, you would see that, really, was that justified? But it is logged as a complaint. Excuse me. We actually had an independent investigator look at the complaints, and the council hired that guy, on my a gentleman from Auckland, to investigate these complaints, because it was actually quite a slur on my reputation. And it was discovered that the complaints, like Russ Remington had made, had no founding evidence.
But what about the staff?
The staff? There is one person, one staff complaint.
Yeah.
And that was to do with her job was in Democracy Services that was loading the complaints. And I said to her, well, you know, you're loading these things as complaints. When do I get an opportunity for natural justice? And she broke down. She cried because she was so upset about how the system was set up that she couldn't actually defend me. She couldn't do anything about it. So she was incredibly upset. It wasn't a complaint about me as such. It was about the system. And this is where the media and a lot of the – will actually take it out of context to get a good news story.
Is there anything, though, like you've gone through that process now and the stress of it, is there things you think you might do differently anyway?
Oh, look, after 6 years, so this is my end of the second triennium, of course I've learned how to be a politician. And that is to really work constructively with your colleagues. You don't have a personal opinion. You have to keep all of that locked up, you know, and work with the other people for the good of the constituents. So, yes, I've learnt how to manage people better, and it's not about me. So, yes, initially I think I struggled with being a strong person and wanting something, even though I know it's right for us, but not having the buy-in with the other politicians. And where I really struggled was the fact that I have achieved so much without giving myself a fat head. But as a councillor, you know, with Whangaroa Harbour Care, a Green Ribbon Award in 2002, New Zealand Land Care Ambassador, and a whole lot of other acknowledgements from government in the work that I'm doing and working with communities, really did put me quite head and shoulders when it comes to achievements within the environment above the rest. Like, I don't use plastic boards. The previous 2 years, I never actually went out beyond the community to rally support. I got voted in on achievement, and I said that to the councillors. I didn't buy a vote. A lot of councillors, they spend tens of thousands of dollars on self-promotion.
Yeah,
I want to be, vote for me, vote for me. I did nothing. I spent $100 on one ad in the Chronicle. No, I didn't. I had to declare $100 for the ad in the Chronicle. It was actually put in for free. The farmers from the area paid for my nomination fees.
Yeah.
So I did it because I was asked to do it. I'm not there because I'm crazy about being a leader. It's not a nice job, actually. It's quite difficult. But through those 6 years, I've learned how to do it. And now I've had 6 years of training. It'd be a waste not to do the third term. And it would be my final term. I believe that you should not be in politics for any longer than three triniums. It's about democracy, and good democracy is to roll it over, have new people involved.
Okay. Stuff we talked about, I think, 3 years ago was where we're getting people who represent like a conservative rural vote on the regional council, or people with environmental motivations on the council. Do you think there was a move further in the direction of an environmental focus between the previous 3 years and the 3 years we're just finishing now? I'm just curious to know that, really.
There are a few more councillors that have an environmental focus, a few more, still not a majority. And until we get that majority, our environment's going to lose. It's mostly about the economy. What people don't understand, to have a healthy environment will mean you'll end up with a healthy economy. You can't put the economy ahead of the environment. And we've learnt that in Raglan, in Whangaroa. You know, when our harbour was full of crap and you couldn't catch fish and the farming was dismal, there was gorse and ragwort through the paddocks, we looked after the waterways, put in riparian fencing and planting, and we improved the paddocks through the weeds were eliminated, stock weren't drowning in the rivers, there was no crap getting into the harbour. Stocking rates on the land improved, healthier animals and productivity improved on the land, and then the harbour improved. What happens? You catch more fish, more people want to be here, you can swim in the water where previously it was polluted, and now look what's happened to Raglan. We almost need to go chuck mud back in the river.
Well, that's right,
to slow the growth.
There is, I think there's some people probably contemplating that as we speak. Of the four people who are running for, folks who don't know, the Waikato region is all the way across to the Kaimais, up to Auckland, down as far as Ruapehu, you were saying. So it's that whole region. Is it called a ward? We're in a ward?
Constituency
we're in is the Waikato constituency, which is actually the same boundary as the Waikato District Council, isn't it?
Correct, yeah.
And so you and Pamela Story are the current councillors. There's two councillors for this ward. Four ran last time. This is my background to this question. Four ran last time. We appeared to get the two most environmentally friendly councillors out of the four. I can't remember one of them. But you've actually said you're not working well with the other councillor from this area? Like, you've written that down on the thing you gave me.
No, the previous councillor, Jenny Heyman, we worked very well together. She was from Port Waikato.
She did. I actually spoke to her yesterday. She did confirm that.
And it's really important. It's critical, actually, that you work really constructively with your other constituent councillor. You've got to work as a team for the sake of your constituents. You know, you are two votes for your Waikato constituency. If you're not working together, you're not communicating, then you are really letting your constituents down. And unfortunately, I have tried multiple times to work with my co-councillor, and she absolutely refuses to work with me. She works with Russ Rimmington, who has been rolled as chair, and another councillor from Matamata Piakau, who has left the council. So the support from our constituent councillor, or my other constituent councillor, didn't have the support or hasn't got the support of the majority of council.
Is that enough of a difference to sway votes?
Well, I have to pick up another supporter from another constituency, another councillor, to make up for that person that isn't supporting me within our own area. You know, for example, Kariori Project, the great work that they're doing.
Yeah.
I didn't get support for them to get that additional funding.
And that's
huge. To me, that was such a letdown. And there's been other areas where...
So was that a close plan, was that a close vote?
Yes.
So yeah. are there lots of close votes?
Oh, there are.
In this council? I mean, given that there's clearly been a split in the council... Well, no. From the outside, it looks like there's been a split in the council. Is that reflected in the voting patterns?
Not really. Look, again, media give the impression that there's a split in the council. The council, as far as getting our work done, hasn't been hindered. Although you would read that I've been isolated from the committees, and that's not true either. I get all the agendas. It was up to the chair of the committee. If they decided they did not want my participation, then they had the right to exclude me. So that was my punishment.
Yeah.
The only councillor that excluded me from participating was Russ Rimmington and Pamela Storey.
Who's your co-councillor for the ward.
And okay. That was just disastrous. The other councillors, Matamata Piakau, attended the table. There wasn't an issue. When it came to workshops, I was excluded from most of the workshops because Pamela chaired the workshops as well, so she didn't want me there, which was a huge disadvantage to the constituents. However, the CEO, Chris McClay, and staff worked with me in parallel and put on separate workshops where I had the luxury of having five or six staff on my own and was able to go into real detail about coastal plans and issues, where I actually had a bigger advantage by doing that than if I was one of 14 and had only 5 minutes to chat.
Okay, yeah.
So that's it ended up the better. Irony. Yeah, the irony.
Yeah, okay. So we're talking about, there's so many big issues with regional council. Like what's something that you want to see happen like in the next 3 years that's significant?
Climate change.
Oh, climate change is going to happen, Fred.
And it's going to be significant. Well, yeah. What council has the ability to make change?
Well, every council has the ability to do something.
Natural resources are managed mostly by the regional council. You're quite correct. All councils, everybody, including yourself, we all have and have
there's
to make change.
There's something we can do, yeah.
But when it comes to rules and regulations, the regional council under the regional plan here, for example, with a new subdivision, we can make rules in the regional plan that say we have to have bike paths, bike roads, from that subdivision to town funded by the developer.
Yeah.
And if we put that in our regional plan, then all the territorial authorities have to abide by that rule.
So the regional plan, is that done on a 10-yearly basis?
Annually.
Okay, not like the district council's district plan, which is a 10-year thing.
Yeah, well, regional plans, yeah, they're reviewed, we add to, we're constantly amending and making...
And I think the district councils are going to go that way anyway because the recent district plan took about 4 years to change.
So
and,
with that,
and they're still going.
So with land use activities, you see how we can absolutely influence climate change. So but that's just transport.
So you gave an example of that.
Farming.
Like creating bike paths.
Farming. You must counter your CO2 production by putting in woodlots. example. That's just an example. See, we could do that as a land use activity. Solar panels. We could say, right, there's no consent required and you can put them on these particular areas. We could do that. We could make it easier for wind farms without having rigorous resource consenting. We could allow for that. There are a number of things regional council could do to
Have they been discussed?
Absolutely, but we haven't got a majority of Greens, well, you know, environmentally sensitive councillors at the stage. We have had, Russ was a climate denier. He was the chair of regional council. He was a denier up until 3 years ago, and he still has queries it. There's other councillors there that absolutely question climate change.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got a majority of those people, you can't make headway.
No, I can see that. Anyone could see that. Could that change at this election?
Absolutely, it could.
Every election, there's a younger generation coming through that is more concerned about climate change, let's say, than the older generation.
And so, unfortunately, we haven't got a lot of young councillors standing. And it's the younger vote that matters.
Most people don't even know the regional council exists.
No, they don't. They don't realise the powerful position the regional council has in actually heading off climate change.
To be fair to the media and you and Russ Remington, like, for all the controversy, at least some people actually know the regional council exists now.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Well, it's been below the radar. I don't know whether it's good or bad, but it has happened.
You know why it's been below the radar? It's because we have the ability to make change, to make substantial change. And when you have a majority of farmers, and these are not what I consider good farmers in council, stifling that change because they can see potentially it could cost them to mitigate their effects. You know, people make money out of using the environment, and they're making a lot more money if they're not accounting for the damage being done to the environment. They're taking more than they're giving back. Does that make sense? I'm trying to, without pinpointing, you know,
court.
But if you've got a majority of people, and Pamela's a dairy farmer, Russ is a dairy farmer, Virko's a dairy farmer, Stu Husband's a dairy farmer, you list off all the councillors that are in there, and you work out why are they so opposed to doing more environmentally sustainable work. And then you work out, you know,
it's a cultural war. It's turned into a cultural war of environmentalists versus farmers, and people come in behind their
team. I disagree with you, Aaron.
Because I think it's an element of it, and I think some people just come in behind their team. You're not having any of that?
Not having a bar of
okay,
it.
Okay, all right, tell us.
Because 80% of our farmers are great farmers. You look at the farmers in Raglan. They've all done riparian fencing and planting.
Yeah.
They're great farmers, and they improve our whole image. They improve our market. They are doing the right thing. They're good farmers.
Yeah.
They're that busy at being good farmers, they've got no time to stand to be a politician.
Okay.
They're doing their core business. So it's unfortunate the regional council or any council, it's not considered a real job. We don't get paid a full salary. It's a part-time job.
What is the salary? Is it like a half-time job or something?
Well, yeah, of course it is.
Half-week job.
You can't live on the salary that we get as a councillor. That's just below the minimum wage in a lot of cases. It depends on the hours that you put in.
If you do 20 hours, it's...
Yeah, 20 hours, it's about... But we don't. I do 40, 50 hours a week.
Okay.
And it is a real job to do it justice. You want to see the agendas that we get to read? You know, there's 1,200 pages.
No, I don't.
Stuff.
I don't,
no,
want,
you
to
don't
see
want to see it
because I know what agendas are like. Yeah, no, it is a frightening level of information that comes through both councils, both, you know, regional and district council.
And we talk with councillors. You know, we've got to communicate. I'm on the phone talking with my East Coast councillor about the coastal plan and what we think about, you know, where a marine reserve should be or what constituents have issues with about this and that. And we're constantly talking. So we are making good decisions for our constituents in our region. So there is a lot of time, although it's mostly talk, it does end up, you know, action on the ground somewhere.
Yeah.
So it's all about the voters, getting the young people in to vote.
So what do you think that has been achieved? I think we've just got a couple of minutes.
What has been achieved?
What was achieved over the last 3 years from your hands?
From my hands? Oh, yeah. Well, I'm on the Climate Change Committee, and we have moved a long way ahead through this triennium to now put ideas forward to the next triennium on, like, the regulatory regional plan to forward heading off climate change. The coastal plan, oh boy, we've put a hell of a lot of effort into the coastal plan, but it's still all draft. You know, the council's like the Titanic.
Yeah,
it takes a hell of a lot of time for it even to adjust its position, its course.
Yeah.
So, but the coastal plan, there's been a lot of work done there. And, you know, with my experience in commercial fishing, being a fishery officer and doing the restoration work,
yeah,
I'm one of the few councillors that have actually been able to add a hang of a lot of value in what I consider and, you know, as what's good for, again, the region, the people, improve our resources. I'm a heavy resource user. I love fishing. I like whitebait fritters. I love mussels.
Yep.
But I don't want to restrict our abilities to take and enjoy these things. The trick is to build the resource, and I know how to do that.
Yeah, okay.
And that's some of the stuff that I'm incorporating into our council and in the way that we're moving forward. Water quality, flood pumps. My God, you would not believe the amount of land that we have now below sea level.
So we're talking mostly up in the Hauraki Plains?
And Waikato. Around Port Waikato, the site of Port Waikato, there's flood banks there. At high tide, there's 38 square kilometres that are below sea level.
Is this sustainable in the long term to keep using this land?
No, it's not.
So what do we do? Do we spend money?
Well, this is the work that we've got to think about. You know, we're now canvassing government for funds for retreat. Well, you can't have stranded assets. Literally, these people that are living below sea level, farms, houses, what are we going to do? Just let them flood and cop the loss?
Yeah.
No, we don't. Our role is to be strong advocates to regional council and look at managed retreat.
To central government?
Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
You look at the Thames Coromandel area, there's close to 800 kilometres, 600 and something kilometres, square kilometres below sea level. That's you know, that's a huge amount of land. That's most of our productive farmland is actually below sea level.
And that's, yeah, a lot there's of pumps. There's hundreds of pumps, I understand, over there.
Well, there's pumps that are pumping up into canals that pump up into a river canal before it discharges out. They're actually way below sea level. Nartia, if that flooded, the little town of Nartia would be an island in the middle of a sea.
Right. So, yeah. All right. So we've got that's a huge thing. We're out of time. My next interview is crossing the road now. And folks, we've been talking to Fred Litzwark, regional councillor, running for regional council again. And good luck. I don't mean it like that.
Well, I do.
Okay, I see.
Why am I doing it again? Well, I'm doing it for good reasons, but thank you.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, thanks for coming in, and good luck with the campaign. And we'll be seeing you on Sunday at the Meet the Candidates.
Yeah, I hope we actually get some interest in this town and people turn up, because I've been to a few others, and you end up with six people in the audience, and there's eight councillors. It's just the...
No, we had more last time. 3 years ago, we had about 50 people, which is
that's great.
Better than eight.
Go Raglan.
Yeah, all right. Thanks, Fred. Cheers,